Into the Blender, episode 44. You're listening to Into the Blender with your hosts, Chooch and Viv.
You can hear us discussing topics ranging from co-parenting a blended family to gaming to media reviews.
Or whatever shiny object catches our eye that day. Your heart's beating for me. I'm just waiting to see. Where's the line that you would draw beyond me and never let me be? But it really doesn't matter.
We're happy to welcome a special guest via the magic of Skype, author of Murder at Avedon Hill, P.G. Holyfield.
Wow. He's actually here?
Yeah.
Hi, PG.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing excellent.
Sweet. I am very happy to be on your show because I love you guys.
Aw.
You're my roomies.
Love you, man.
Yes.
The con roomies here. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's been a long time coming. I've wanted to do something for your show, whether it was, you know, gaming related for your one podcast,
mm-hmm,
or a Phineas and Ferb segment for
Blended Family.
So, mm-hmm.
Well, this is the best. We get to talk about your book.
Yay! Yes.
And we finally have you in our burrow after all this time. You're here. You're here with us recording.
Oh,
very exciting.
Virtually.
No,
virtually.
He's here through the magic of Skype. Sitting.
I'm sitting with you.
Yes, he's right here.
Oh, yeah, from the poster you printed out of his face.
And the full body size cutout, yeah.
There's some Photoshop, so don't be too scared.
Yeah,
Thong.
I have clothes on, I hope.
You have item of clothing on. I won't say what. Cute hat. No, kidding.
Yeah, and my hat.
So, Murdered Avedon Hill, when and where can we buy this thing?
After 12 years of... No. On May 15th, it will be available on Amazon. That's where we'll be... It'll probably be on other booksellers as well, online booksellers, but we're going to push for Amazon, like a lot of the podcast authors do, try to get as many people to buy it on the 15th,
mm-hmm,
push us up the charts and see how we can do. We'll be having some fun on the 15th. I'm going to do a live show on Stick'Em and
cool,
do some readings and, you know, a few call-ins, I hope, and haven't really got it all planned out yet. Some contests and we'll have some fun.
Awesome.
Yeah.
We've talked about the book in media reviews in the past, but for anyone that isn't familiar with what the book's about, can you just give us a little background on the story?
Oh, yeah. Murdered Avedon Hill is a murder mystery that's set in a fantasy world. It's the first novel that's in that world, so it's called The Land of Cairn, and it's sort of, you know, serves two purposes. It's got the story that is, you know, pretty engaging, I think. And then also it's, you know, good introduction to the world, you know, the magic system and the religious aspects of the world. And the plot itself, the two heroes of the story show up at this town and they discover that the town has been sort of closed off because one of the prominent citizens has been murdered. Mm-hmm. And one of the characters, Aramis Cragen, he's a well-respected member of one of the groups in the world called the Aaronic Advisors.
Mm.
He's retired from that group, but he has sort of a reputation of solving problems. And so he offers his services to help discover who killed this woman, and finds out a whole lot more is going on in this town than just the one murder. And, you know, so wackiness ensues.
Well, you mentioned the religion and you called it the magic system. And I really loved the depth that you put into both of those elements. The story is rich and all of that also, but you obviously put a lot of time and thought into the concept of the river of magic and,
mm-hmm,
and like I said, the religion system. So I think that was one of the reasons that I love it so much, because sometimes people say, and they use magic to do this and poof, and it just happened.
Mm-hmm.
But
right,
you actually
right,
put
right.
a lot of thought into it. So how did that occur to you?
Yeah, I mean, it helps that this has been, you know, my fantasy setting that I've been working in writing and gaming wise for nearly 20 years, or since I was 18. So yeah, wow. 22 years. You know, it's changed a lot, of course, in 20 years. But the two main conceits with the world being that the gods or the immortal beings called the Children of Oz, they have the ability to enter the world. In ancient history in this world, they pretty much could do it on a whim, sort of like, you know, the Greek gods could, you know, sort of show up and cause havoc. Mm-hmm. So after some pretty catastrophic events early on in Cairn's history, the gods were sort of put under some constraints that would limit their powers and how they could enter the world. So they can be born into the world as mortals and live mortal lives, but they don't have any knowledge of their true nature unless something happens during their life that would give them this knowledge. And so they would realize their true nature and have some additional powers, but they couldn't, you know, they're not immortal. They're not, you know, all powerful like they would have been early on in Cairn's history. So that's sort of one of the pervasive storylines throughout, you know, the fiction that I write. In this story, there's not, you know, it's not as in your face, but it allows, because the characters talk about it and you know, there's certain things that do go on in the story that touch upon it, then it you know, adds a lot of richness to the story.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then the magic system, you know, my main goal with the magic system, I've always liked low magic settings, things like, you know, one of our favorites, George R.R. Martin. You know, I mean, we've loved the, you know, Song of Fire and Ice books, but yeah. There's barely been any magic in it at all.
Right.
But you know it's there, mm-hmm. and you know it's going to happen, or you know it's, you know, that the dragons are coming, you know. You know. So.
And dead people walking around doing stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's there, but it's not, you know, you can't just have magic just to save the day and you know, be such a focus of the world. It sort of just adds this crutch to storytelling that I don't like. So, I mean, you know, there are magical powers. There are, you know, the normal magic systems you would see, you know, in most fantasy settings, but it is toned down, and it's not like everybody in the world has magic. So that was always important to me.
And it adds a really cool dramatic element too, in some situations.
Right. Absolutely.
You did just mention a minute ago about gaming in this world. Could you share how you actually developed the world and involved the gaming with it? Or the gaming actually developed the world, I guess.
Right. I played Dungeons & Dragons when I was, you know, starting when I was probably 13. And I lived in an area where there wasn't too much of a gaming, you know, lived in the Bible Belt, and there wasn't, you know, Dungeons & Dragons especially was frowned upon by a lot of people where I lived. Mm. So I didn't have a whole lot of friends that played, but I, you know, I wrote stories and I wrote modules and I, you know, did things. And once I got into college, you know, I got it with a group that, you know, we played probably for a couple of years. We played every other weekend or so. So, we, you know, that was my big gaming, you know, history of actually playing Dungeons and Dragons. During that time, I did create the framework for the Land of Cairn. And even from that time, probably, you know, 2021 was when I started, whenever I played in a game or I played in a, you know, an MMO or whatever, I always created a character named Aramis Craig, and he was always my persona mm-hmm. whenever I gamed. So, you know, I wrote my first novel probably 15 years ago that was since burned. You know, with Aramis when he was in his 20s, and a lot of the things that are alluded to in the novel about Aramis's past was from that novel that will someday hopefully be rewritten. So, you know, when Aaron is asking Aramis about, you know, working for his grandfather mm-hmm. and you know, having some sort of relationship with his mother,
right,
that was from, you know, a book written 10-15 years ago. So
cool.
Yeah, the story itself came into being because I was heavily involved prior to and after Neverwinter Nights came out, which is a computer game that came out in, mm-hmm. I think, 2003. when it came out, and I was involved with one of the community websites, Neverwinter Vault, and I wrote some short stories set in Cairn, and that was sort of my first foray into releasing text or fiction, you know, for free on through websites. So I was writing some short stories on that site. And then, you know, after the game came out, one of the things we wanted to do, one of the editor at that website and a couple other guys, we wanted to create a module for people to play through. And it would be sort of like a tournament module where multiple groups of players could play through it. And we would have a point system. So if they found out certain things or performed certain actions, they would get points for that. And one of the things about it was that I was the one responsible for writing the story or, you know, creating the plot. And so I said, well, you know, good idea for this would be to do a murder mystery, you know, because you could have one location, a town, and, you know, so you didn't have to, you know, there wouldn't be so much you'd have to create. You know, with the builder, with the creator, you know, make it too complex. And one of the cool things about it was that we would actually have not just one killer, but there would be three possible killers. And depending on when, you know, it would be a randomized thing, when a group came in, it could change who the killer is, and different pieces of evidence would become active. And, you know, so there was some logic in there that was going to make the experience different for people. And also so that if one person or one group came in, they wouldn't be able to just tell everybody, oh, it's so-and-so, to, you know, help them get through the module faster or whatever. Yeah. So that's where the genesis of the actual plot and the storyline came in. And then just normal real life stuff. The module never got built, or, you know, it's got started, but with the coding and the different aspects of it, just didn't have time to make it happen. Yeah. So I had, as you well know from playing RPGs, computer RPGs, probably the best experience that I had doing it was writing all the dialogue for all the characters, because when you're playing a computer game, of course, you need to account for every possible combination of elements that, you know, well, if this player has talked to so-and-so and has found out this piece of information, then it's going to open up this conversation tree with this character. And so I had spreadsheets of dialogue for all the characters that you see in the novel, and all the characters were NPCs in the, you know, in the, in the module. And I just, you know, I couldn't just throw it away and scrap it. So I was just like, well, I'm going to write this as a novel. And I started releasing it on the website that I was talking about, doing it as a, it was actually an interactive game for a while where people would come in and I would end each chapter and then ask a question, you know, in the next chapter, you know, what do you think Aramis will do? And, you know, give three options, you know, will he go, you know, explore the caves or talk to so-and-so or, you know, what have you. And people could bet on what they thought would happen next. And they had a little, you know, thing that would capture, you know, what people were betting, you know, just for points. And then whoever, at the end, whoever had the most points would win a prize or something. But cool. After, yeah, it was, I mean, it was a lot of fun. But after about 20 chapters, I think, you know, enough people had said, you need to write this and try to get it published and not, you know, not keep doing it here. So I, you know, talked to the editor. I was like, you know, do you mind if I stop doing this and just, you know, write it as a novel? He's, you know, and he's always been the best, you know, really helpful, just wanting me to get my writing out there. He's just like, yeah, no, that's perfect. You should do it. So that was what got me to, you know, finish the novel. I actually started over and just rewrote it because it wasn't in the form it needed to be a real novel, because it was everything was a cliffhanger at the end of every chapter. Oh, yeah. And, you know, because it was, the contest was tied to it. So it, you know, started over and rewrote it. And then, you know, probably 2/3 of the way through, I was like, well, this podcasting thing looks pretty cool. So that's what started that whole thing.
Oh, nice. What would you say was the hardest part of the whole writing process for the novel?
Probably a combination of two things. One is I was, like I said before, I was using it to not only define the world for the reader, but I was also doing it for myself. The conversations where Aramis and Aaron are talking about the history of the world, or the, you know, the magic or the system, or what have you. that was probably a lot more in depth and bordering on just, you know, boring, bordering on boring. You know, it was too much exposition, not enough. You know, it was too much. Mm-hmm. So that was learning how to make that more part of the narrative and make it flow and make it, you know, and that was a lot of what we did with Gabrielle Harbouy at Dragon Moon was to tighten that up and, you know, really focus on what was important to the story and not just, you know, talk about things just to get that information out to mm-hmm. people, just what was most important for the plot of the story. So that was one thing. And then really just the climax of the book was just the hardest thing I've ever had to write. As far as, I mean, not what happens in it wasn't hard to write. It was just the emotional, you know, whatever the resonance of getting through that, because it was the first, you know, this is my first real novel mm-hmm. and getting through that with everything that was going on and all of the different pieces of the story coming together. It probably took a good 2 or 3 months to actually write that 2 or 3 chapter segment. So that was probably the hardest part.
Wow. Would you say you have a favorite character? Would it be Aramis?
Yeah. I mean, obviously Aramis is the character I've been closest to for the last 20 years, but probably my favorite character in this novel would be Cletus, the gatekeeper. He's just, he's funny and he, you know, not giving anything away. He's, you know, obviously from the very beginning, he's more than he seems. And, you know, Aramis recognizes that right up front, but mm-hmm. just how, you know, what his real story is. And I mean, you really don't even know at the end of the book what his, you know, complete story is, but he's definitely my favorite character.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned that you were already releasing it for free in the contest and on the forums and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Was there a person, was there a podcast that triggered your desire to podcast it and put it out there? Because you make it sound like it just happened. But was there an actual trigger or motivation?
Yeah, I got, like a lot of people who discover, I got an iPod for my birthday in 2006. And the first thing I looked for was, you know, podcasts that had something to do with fantasy. So I found Survival Guide to Writing Fantasy, T. Morris. And the first podcast novel that I listened to was Brave Men Run. Mm-hmm. And both, you know, just listening to T talk about the business of writing and, you know, his experiences. And I knew that he had already podcast Moravia by that point, but I hadn't listened to that. And listening to Brave Men Run, that was just, I was just like, okay, I got to do this. And, you know, just from there discovered Scott Sigler and, you know, the early, because this was early on. So there was only, you know, 20 or 30 people that had released stuff so far. So, you know, it was a new frontier by that point. By the time I got started, because it took me so long to get started, you know, there were a lot more people already doing it, but I knew, you know, pretty much early 2006 that I wanted to do it.
What made you decide to do it as the audio drama that it ended up as, rather than just doing a straight read?
Because I'm stupid. No, I it wasn't stupid. It was a great. It was something that really helped me get the word out. The main idea that started it was I didn't want to do the female voices. Mm. I wanted it to, you know, be a little more realistic, and I mean that. You know, I can soften my voice enough for just a straight read for the female voices. It would have been fine. But, you know, I did want at least, you know, like Sarah Tremaine and Lane Nichols. I wanted those characters because they are, you know, sexual in nature. Not that there's sex in the book, but there's they have a sensuality about them that I wanted to get into the book or into the audio. And I didn't, you know, I wouldn't be able to do that with my voice, of course. Mm-hmm. And so I had gotten a couple people to agree to do those voices. And then I had mentioned it on Twitter, you know, that I was doing some things with that. And I had a couple other people say, hey, can I help you out? And in probably a week's time, I had most of the characters filled for, you know, voices. And then when T. Morris said he would do Father Joris, which is a major character as far as how many lines and you know the impact of the character, I was just like, okay, well, I'm gonna go for it. And it, you know, it was a great decision, because you have all those podcasters. Nobody, T was the first to actually do the full cast for a novel. Not, you know, there's a lot of audio dramas out there, but as far as taking a podcast novel and having all the lines read by other characters, T was pretty much the first, I think, with Bilbo Baddings, and I was pretty much the second or third that to come out to do that. And because it was so early, the people that I was asking, they didn't have 10 other things to do because it was still early on. So not everybody's asking them, hey, can you read this part? Hey, can you read this part?
Right.
So a lot of, you know, they didn't know who I mean, they knew who I was because I had done enough things for other podcasts by that point that I was already a name that people knew somewhat about. But I mean, I hadn't had a novel out there, and this was my first, you know, fiction that was being podcast. So the fact that they even said yes was amazing. And then the fact that they all had podcasts, you know, that was a good marketing promotional opportunity, because it got the word out immediately that, you know, hey, I'm reading this part over on this podcast if you want to, you know, go listen. So that helped, you know, right out the gate to get probably more listeners than I deserved at that point, frankly. Nobody knew my writing by that point, and you know, I had two or three episodes out, and I already had over 1,000 listeners, and it was like, okay, this is fun.
Nice. So,
and the feedback that you get from those are pretty amazing.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, it was the feedback was, you know, sort of my life's blood as far as getting back in there and doing it. Cause it was a long drawn out process. It took me 2 years to get the production done. Because I was doing the full cast audio and doing the music and doing the sound effects, you know, a single episode could take anywhere from 15 to 30 hours to produce. So the decision was good as far as doing it as the full audio drama or full cast audio, but it was, you know, it did have its drawbacks as far as getting it produced.
Wow. And will the podcast version still be available after the paper book is published?
Yeah, it'll always be on my site and on at Podio Books. That's not a problem with the publisher or anything. I mean, that's part of the reason I got the book deal with Dragon Moon, is that they, you know, appreciate what the podcast authors do with their own promotion and their own marketing, and they would, yeah, you know, they would never ask you to pull anything down or anything like that.
Nice. How does the print novel differ from what was podcast?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, there's the main goal with the editing of the novel was to, one, lower the word count. It was 150,000 words, and wanted to get it down to probably like 120. I think we got it down to like 128 or something like that. So basically anywhere where we could tighten it up, we cut and cut and cut, but nothing plot-wise was cut. And that was actually a pleasant surprise, that because when I went in, I was like, you know, I trusted Gabrielle with it. And I was just like, you know, if we need to cut plots, we need to cut characters, we, you know, to make it better, you know, I'm open to whatever. And she certainly appreciated that. But when we went through it, you know, one of the things that came out, which I was really proud of, is that you really can't cut a whole lot, even though you got all these characters and all the different things that are going on, because of, there's a lot of ideas and plot threads that are, you know, planted in, and they all come together at the end of the novel. So cutting any of that early on would make the end of the novel not as fulfilling.
Sure.
So it was, you know, we didn't have any, you know, major plot threads or minor plot threads that really got cut at all. There's one character that got cut, the butcher. So anybody that loved the butcher that we saw once in the novel, we just turned that into a little aside that, you know, we didn't really learn anything from the butcher anyway. So most of the cutting was just things where I, you know, went really verbose on the politics or the, you know, the magic system that could be a lot more concise. We cut and shaped it to make it a lot better. You know, that the one thing that I found, because I went through the novel, The Proof, just a couple weeks ago, and that was the first time I was able to see it, you know, in the with the correct font and the layout and all of that.
That's got to be cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. Very, very cool. Really like the way it looks, like the type setting that was used. I mean, it was really cool.
And the cover is fantastic.
And the cover is wonderful. I was really happy. That was a very good experience working on that with Alex White, and it turned out great.
Yeah, after seeing the cover, I didn't remember the whole wood chipper thing, but
yes, that was my April Fool's cover, and actually had some people fall for that. They're like, why are you changing it to this? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, we're editing, you know, we're refining. There's a little change in the story. Too funny.
My joke was that for those of you that haven't seen it, Alex had done a fake, not cover for that, but for something else. He inserted the image of Fargo, you know, with the wood chipper and you know, the legs coming out of the wood chipper.
And right.
So I released that on April 1st as the new cover for Murdered Avedon Hill with this guy on the wood chipper. And it was, you know, the joke was, well, you know, I can make a wood chipper work, but the blue cotton socks, I can't make that work.
Awesome. So
when I was going through the proof, you know, I've read this book 40 times by now. And so besides being sick of it myself, I was going through it and I was just surprised because it was the first time I've really read it from beginning to end after we had gone through the editing process, and the pacing of it is a whole lot better. I mean, it's just really tight. The second half of the novel especially is just, you know, just flows really well, and you know, I'm really proud of it. So it's a good read, people. Go buy it, people.
Well, now what opportunities are people going to have for book signings and readings? You'll be, of course, at BaltCon, and you'll be at DragonCon.
Yes. Those are the two main places that I'll be, you know, pushing the book as far as in person and doing book signings. Probably do something local here in Charlotte, North Carolina, if I can. I work in one of the largest buildings, campuses for a single workplace, second to the Pentagon as far as the number of people and square footage of the building and stuff. And they do things there in their food court where they have people come in to sell things. So I'm going to see if I can get a Dragon Moon book sale or something and have, you know, T and Pip come down, or whoever can come down here, and we can try to sell some books one day or something. Yeah, but BaltCon and DragonCon are going to be the two big opportunities for book signings and readings. And on the 15th live show here, I will definitely be doing readings from the book and from other stuff as well. So we'll have some fun with it.
We always buy our copies on the preferred Amazon date. So your rush date is May 15th. Mm-hmm. But for other folks that aren't able to do that, will they be able to buy the book from you when you're at BaltCon and your DragonCon appearances for you to get your signature?
I will. I'm having a book launch event. We're not allowed to call it a party.
Nope.
So it's not a party.
It's an event.
It's not a party. It'll be a party, but we're not going to call it a party.
It's not going to be written down anywhere as a party.
Yeah. And with Patrick McLean and Nathan Lowell, we're doing a book launch event for our three books. And so that will be an opportunity to buy it. We'll also, Dragon Moon has a table in the dealer's room for BaltCon. I will have books with me at DragonCon. I don't know. It's too far ahead. I don't know if they as in Dragon Moon Press, is doing a table in the dealer room or not this time. So I will find that out at the right time. But I will definitely have books with me there.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right. You have any plans for a sequel?
Yes, I am.
Or prequel. As you mentioned.
Yes.
Fair Mrs. Past.
The goal right now, I will hopefully have the direct sequel completed by the end of this year. It should be shorter, and it should be There's a lot less characters, so podcasting it won't be as difficult. I'll probably do a straight read for it though, because it's more of a ghost story. It's more of a parlor mystery, Agatha Christie type mystery, where it's in one particular location, and Aramis and Aaron find themselves trapped in a place, and they pretty much figure out early on they have to discover what's going on at this location, this farmhouse, in order to escape. Because when they try to escape or leave and they go to sleep, whenever they go to sleep, they wake up, they're back in the house.
Ooh.
So, so there's some supernatural stuff going on in it. There's the idea being, we've talked about the tears in the fabric caused by the early history of the children coming down and causing all sorts of problems and wars and what have you. And this is right near one of these locations. And so something is causing what's going on in part in this home. So they need to figure out what exactly is going on. So
You mentioned the children a couple times. Do you want to talk about the Tales of the Children?
After I finished Murdered Avedon Hill, I put the word out that if anybody wanted to write a short story in the setting, specifically that touch upon one of the children of Aj, then, they could come in, we could try to figure out a good, they could suggest a story, I could work with them on, making it fit within the setting. And we did, starting in September, I was doing live readings on Stick'Em, and I think we did 8 between September and the end of the year, and 3 of those have been released in audio form through the podcast feed. I'm going to be doing probably one reading on the 15th, a tale from Tales of the Children, and then I'm actually going to be releasing a story that, and I can't pronounce his last name, I have to look up, but Dan Absalonson, I can't remember. Dan the Art Man on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a story and actually record. I told him that I would eventually get to it as far as recording it, but if he wanted to do it himself for his own feed, and he wanted to do it because he's starting his own podcast, and I said if the quality of it is good, then I could put it in my feed, and so he wouldn't have to wait for me to have time to record it, which may be later this year. So he did, and I still have to finish listening to it, but it sounds like the quality of the production, because he had sound effects and music and all sorts of stuff going on.
Cool.
Sounds great. So I'm because the story was a lot of fun, so I was very glad to hear just a little bit that I've listened to. I'm gonna finish listening to that and hopefully be releasing that between now and the 15th as well. So, I'm doing as many interviews as I can. I'm going to try to pull, some of them into the feed as well. So any, the people that might have forgotten about me, if they still have the feed in their, podcatcher, then they're going to start seeing stuff. They're going to be like, wow, what's all this? So, try to get the word out.
All right. Is there any plans on releasing any of the Tales of the Children stuff in print?
Like an anthology or something like that?
Eventually, I'm hoping to. One of the things that we'll do is once we get a good, good number of really solid stories, take them to Dragon Moon and see if that would be something they would want to do. And if not, then I can do it myself, because I would, I could definitely do that. One of the things we're doing with Tales of the Children, whether it's donations for the podcast or if there is an eventual print version, any proceeds, donations, royalties, what have you, they're going to be donated 100% to the Leiomyosarcoma Direct Research Fund. It makes me look good, which is always nice that I'm doing this, but really it's because I've got so many authors, I don't want to worry about trying to split up any money between all of them.
Sure.
So.
And it's a great cause.
And it is a great cause.
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing. So there, if you go to pgholyfield.com, you will see a couple donate buttons. One for my beer fund. So that's all I would really use it for is going to conventions and have a little spending money. There's a donation for that, but there's also the donation for the Tales of the Children and the LMS Direct Research Fund. So check that out.
Definitely, because that was, you know, talking about the religion, the tales of the children had me very interested, because hearing whichever piece of their tale that it told, whichever iteration of them, it was just fascinating. I loved it.
Yeah, it was a great. It was a great idea. I'm such a genius. No, I mean it was fun because there's so many. You know, I mean, you've got 11 children. You've got however many incarnations, mm-hmm. you know, that could have occurred in the past. And, you know, I mean, there's just a lot of material there yep. that people could write about. And, you know, at first I was sort of trying to say, okay, well, you know, we have to make sure these stories sound like they belong in my world.
Right.
And, you know, then, you know, like Jack Mangan wrote a story that we'll be doing. That'll be the next one that I podcast. That was completely different as far, you know, high magic and just, you know, dragons and flying horses, you know, whatever. I mean, just all crazy stuff. And I'm just like, well, yeah, who cares? I mean, it's not like it has to be canon and has to be sound like my stuff.
Right.
And, you know, I could always say, well, early on in the history, there was a whole lot more magic going on. So, you know, it works.
Yeah.
Or it could be like oral fable.
Right. Yeah. And that's mythos. Exactly that some of the stories, you know, I specifically said, if you could do them as sort of a campfire tale or a, you know, a story that a bard is telling, you know, make that work. Cause that's, you know, good way to handle this type of story. So some people have done that very well.
I'm gonna jump back into kind of writing itself. Who would you say are your biggest influences?
Good question. I probably my favorite writer is Catherine Kurtz. She wrote the Dorini novel, the Adept novels with another writer. And the influence were, especially with her handling of magic within her settings and her characters, you know, always felt real to me, and just the way that she handled, you know, the politics, the worlds that she creates is always, it's a fantasy world, but there's just, you know, the religion is almost pseudo-Catholic, so it still feels, you know, you have this connection to it that really comes through with the stories.
Mm-hmm.
So she's been a real big influence. Stephen R. Donaldson, I've really, the first two Thomas Covenant series, those are probably some of my favorite books. And his science fiction series has been, that was not as well received, but it's probably one of my favorite science fiction series, the Gap series of five novels. I recommend them highly. Yeah, most of his novels have, you know, what's called an anti-hero or a very unlikable protagonist. And I like that juxtaposition a lot, you know, within his works, and I hope to be able to do something like that in some of my writing in the future. Just having a character that you know you really don't like at all, but by the time the book's done, you're still rooting for them to win out because they're the, you know, the main character. He handles that very well. So those are probably my two favorite influences. Most of my influences, though, are really from movies. You know, I'm a big movie buff, so you know, things like the Sean Connery movie, The Name of the Rose, big influence on Aramis Cragen, and just the feel of this novel has a lot to do with that. Another thing I just sort of put together in my head as I was watching this, I was like, man, this really influenced me. Twin Peaks.
Mm.
You know, Avedon Hill could be a Twin Peaks in, you know, some fantasy world.
Yeah.
As far as just every character in the book has something strange about them. You know, there's nobody that's just normal in every way. You know, it's something, you know, something going on.
Mm-hmm.
So that sort of hit me as I was watching Twin Peaks one time. And, but you know, things like that. And there's a movie that I always say when people ask me movies that I connect to was a French movie called Brotherhood of the Wolf. That wasn't the French title, of course, but that was the American. It wasn't a straight up fantasy. It was a mixture of a martial arts movie, but it was set in France during the French Revolution. but there was a story about a werewolf, or what they thought was a werewolf, and just a lot of weird characters, and again, martial arts and different things. But it's a really good movie, and I recommend that. But that's one of the type of things, like with like the, you know, Aramis's fighting abilities and different things that sort of came in part from those types of movies.
You've got something that you tweeted a couple of times about the, I think it's called Cast It, the website that you put characters in and people can go in and select actors to.
I'm actually doing a contest for that. So if you haven't listened to Murder at Avedon Hill, then you won't be able to take part in this very well. But there's a website called storycasting.com, and it's a pretty addictive site. It's you can take any book that has been written, and if you're the type of person that when you're reading a book or listening to an audiobook and you see it as a film and you picture actors in your head, you know, playing roles, then this is the site for you, because you can go in and take any book and take the characters and just say, okay, oh, I think, you know, this person should be played by Tom Cruise and this person should be played by so-and-so. And so they contacted me and they said, hey, we'd like to put Murder at Avedon Hill on here. And I said, oh, okay, that's awesome. Cool. So, so I went over there after they put it up and I picked, they have a limit of 15 characters. So Murder at Avedon Hill has a lot more than 15 characters. So I went and picked the 15 that I could, you know, easily put somebody in there. And anybody that wants to go out there, if you go to storycasting.com and do a search on Murder at Avedon Hill or on PG Holyfield, then you'll see it come up. And the one contest, which I really haven't even announced yet, but if you cast the movie with, or the characters with, you know, a different actors, and I find that when I look at your list, that there's an actor or an actress that I think would actually be better than what I chose after seeing it, then I'm going to put your name in a hat and, you know, I'll have a drawing on the 15th to say, you know, that this person wins something. I haven't figured out what yet. So if you have listened to the novel and want to go over to storycasting.com, then have some fun with that. Cause that site's pretty addicting. I stay away just cause I know I could spend a lot of time there going through different books and saying, ooh, I think this person should be playing this character.
Well, I had gone through and done a couple of the characters, but you said that they wiped that. Now I have to try and remember who I cast. Go back and do it again.
I'm sorry. Yeah, it was partly my fault and partly they something in their database, because I went through and I had done, you know, a few characters, and I actually, did I misspell a character's name?
You used a different last name for Sarah.
Long story that your fans don't need to hear, but yeah, I put the wrong last name for a character. So, but I think they were going to redo it anyway for some reason, and they redid it, and because they had to give me an author account, so they had to redo the book because of that or something. But so you had to go back and redo it.
I have to remember who I cast, but that's okay. It was fun. It was really fun, and I, like you're saying, I spent a lot of time going in there, going, what about this for that person? And yeah, it is addictive.
I made them add actors to their database because they didn't have certain people that I wanted.
Oh, well, that's just so wrong.
Well, they say that if there's some actor, just let us know, we'll add it. So, and they'll do that for anybody. So if you're out there and you find an actor that isn't on their list, then just go to their contact thing and request it, and they'll add it. So, because they didn't have Mark Strong, the bad guy from Sherlock Holmes, and the bad guy that's in, or from, if you've seen Kick-Ass.
Not yet.
Yeah, I still haven't seen it.
You need to go see this movie.
Yeah.
You may not like it at all. There's a lot of people that don't like it. In fact, my best friend from high school and college called me. I was like, man, did you like it? And he's like, no, I didn't like it at all. I was like, ah!
Oh, well, we definitely want to see it. We've only got 3 weekends till Balticon, so we're in panic mode at this point.
I understand.
So, yeah. Yeah, you understand. You've got a book launching.
I got a book launch, I've got a reading, I've got, yeah, we've got lots of stuff going on.
I do have a really important question to ask you though.
Yes.
What games are you playing right now that you've played recently that you just loved and you want to spread the word about? Tabletop, console, doesn't matter. Because you were playing Heavy Rain.
Yes. Yeah, I got a PlayStation 3 for Christmas. So that's been my my drug of choice lately. When I can get away from Bejeweled, which just is
Eats your life, doesn't it?
God, I can't believe how
It's
much
such a
time I spent
simple
on.
game.
It's a minute at a time for the Blitz thing, whatever, on Facebook. Anyway, yes, that's why I won't ever get a second novel written. No.
Not allowed, sorry.
Not allowed. Probably the best game that I've finished would be Uncharted 2 for the PlayStation 3. That was just a really great experience, cinematic experience, and good story, well told, a lot of good action. Heavy Rain, very quirky as far as the mechanics, but I would recommend it for anybody that wants to sort of experience a choose your own adventure, but with more button presses and things like that. I'm trying to think of for the PC. I've been playing Dragon Age, which I haven't probably about halfway through, and I just haven't had time to finish it. But I'm pretty much a BioWare fanboy, so anything that they put out, I buy and either play it or at least keep it in my possession to play it someday. Because they did Neverwinter Nights and all the other games that they have done. Baldur's Gate 2, probably my favorite computer game ever. As far as tabletop, I've been playing with Patrick Infected. What's the one? Pandemic.
Pandemic.
So I've been playing Pandemic whenever he's asked a couple times. We played that. And I bought at Dragon Con last year
You're gonna say
the George R. R. Martin, the Game of Thrones.
Oh, what?
But haven't played it,
I
so
know, and we must remedy that because I am
he will be
twitching.
bringing it.
Thank you.
If there's any way, if they've got a PDF of the instructions online, or I'll make a copy of it for you, because frankly I can't figure it out. So I mean, I can figure it out,
It's like a
and it's
game
one of
within a game.
yeah and it's one of those things where you just have to do it to learn it. It's you just can't read it and really understand it until you got the pieces out and you're doing it. Yeah, it's like all of those card games that have subsets of rules for certain situations. So it's very, complex when you're looking at it in just looking at the instructions. But when we play it, I'm sure it'll be very clear, or will become very clear. So yes, so I'm bringing that to Balticon, and you and me and Chooch and hopefully Patrick will play.
Right
Yee.
on.
Yee!
I went out on Twitter and I asked if anybody had any questions for you. So the first question is boxers or briefs? And I'm going to amend this and say you can also answer thong or commando. Those are both acceptable also.
I mean, my answer was going to be, commando, of course, but I guess it would be boxer briefs, not strictly briefs, not strictly boxer, but those in between pseudo, boxers that they make,
Yes, I hear they're quite comfortable.
That's my preference.
And strangely enough, the second question is, have you, and I guess it's, do you wear cartoon characters on your underwear? And if so, whom? And I love that both of the questions are underwear questions. And if it
And
gives
they
you
were
any,
unrelated from different people.
they're
That
from
is my
different people.
reputation.
And if it gives you any peace at all, they were both women.
Okay.
Don't know if that helps or not. So, any cartoon characters on your boxer briefs?
I don't wear any underwear that has cartoon characters. I would wear Phineas and Ferb underwear if I had it, but I see enough of the cartoon characters on my daughter's underwear, the princesses and the Dora and the, so I have quite enough funny underwear that I have to look at all the time. So yeah, most of mine have hearts and no.
So that's your official answer.
Yeah, so that's my official answer. Yeah, hearts and puppy dogs and no. So that was the two wonderful questions we got from Twitter. Thanks, Twitter.
Yes, Twitter's there for the hard-hitting.
Investigative reporting questions.
My
That's all right.
fans. Sorry about his underwear.
I don't know if it says more about you or Viv's followers.
Yeah, that's true.
We don't know who this guy is, but ask him about his underwear.
What kind of panties does he wear?
I will be wearing panties at BaltCon, so.
Oh, I mean, good.
I think that pretty much signals that we need to close.
The idea of me wearing panties at BaltCon, that's a good way to end the interview there. I think we need to go, Patrick. Yeah.
So you will be at BaltCon 44 Hunt Valley Marriott in Hunt Valley, Maryland. Memorial Day weekend, May 28th to the 31st. And when is the book launch event?
That would be Saturday night, I believe. What time's the party?
11.
The new media party's at 11.
I'm pretty sure it's 8 o'clock. It's in the Chesapeake, I think, at 8 o'clock. I mean, it's not really going to be a party anyway, because there's a panel before and the panel after. So we're going to be, you know, jumping in, maybe moving some stuff around to try to, you know, give people opportunity to buy things if they wanted to, or, you know, we can stand up and read, you know, very short segments of something if we wanted to.
Cool.
Yeah.
We have no real plans.
I can't imagine how you and Nathan and Patrick don't have like a set plan and itinerary and schedule. And
I've been trying to get Patrick to, we've had this idea of filming a promo for the next season of Flinchy, which really hasn't been written yet still after all this time.
But you were going to write it on the way to Dragon Con.
Yeah, we were going to write it on the way to Balticon last year. We were going to write it on the way to Dragon Con last year. And now it looks like he might be flying to Balticon and then riding back with me. So gotcha. I don't think that we'll be writing at any point there. But
you have plenty of time on the way back.
Yeah,
it works so well.
We've had this idea of doing a promo thing where it's just him and me and some funny music in the background, and we're riding in a golf cart, and he's just like yapping or something. You can't hear what he's saying, and I just sort of look over at him and I push him out of the golf cart, and he does this tumble on the grass, and I just drive off in the golf cart. And you know, and we're going to have time at the bachelor party, I hope, next weekend, because Patrick's getting married later this month. And you know, we're going to be a paintball, you know, doing paintball. So there may be opportunity for filming something there.
We'll put him at gunpoint and just say, you know, unless you film this right now, I'm going to, you know, shoot you with a paintball pellet.
Yep. I wanted to have something to show at the book launch, just, you know, a 30-second funny thing, you know, so we might try to do something.
Mm-hmm.
I keep saying it, and he keeps like, yeah, man, we'll do something. that's TikTok for you.
Well, he is getting married. I can see how that would be a distraction.
Yeah, he gets married on the 15th, so we're going to call him like a half hour. We're going to Skype to him about a half hour before his wedding so that we can see how nervous he is and scare him or something.
Yeah. That sounds really kind.
Hey, he's got a book to pimp too, so
that's,
you know,
true.
Just because he's getting married doesn't mean he can't, you know, talk.
True.
Can't shut him up.
As we wrap this up, you have any parting info, thoughts you want to leave?
Yeah, one of the things, you know, for people that haven't given the podcast a try, Murder Devon on Hill, one of the things we're trying to put out there to people is that Murder Devon on Hill sort of holds the distinction that it really is a cross-genre work, because when one of the things that we found over the couple years of the production and even now is that people are finding it and giving it a try and not knowing what it is because of the name. And so I've had emails and comments saying, well, I started listening to this because I like mysteries, and either they didn't know it was a fantasy, or they just, you know, sort of said, well, I'll give it a try, even though I don't normally listen to fantasy. So if you've got family or friends that haven't really given fantasy a try, but they do like mysteries, then this may be a good gateway drug for them. If they do like this, then you may be able to, you know, open up a new world for them as far as, you know, fiction. So I would definitely recommend it for people like that, and for anybody that likes fantasy, they should really enjoy this book.
Absolutely.
Where is the world of PG? Where can people find you on the nets?
Yes, pgholyfield.com is where pretty much everything is. If you want to listen to Murder at Avedon Hill without the 2 to 3 year old chatter that it, you know, is on each episode before and after, then go to patiobooks.com and do a search on Murder at Avedon Hill, and you'll get just the chapters there, and hope you enjoy it.
Awesome.
And they can find you on Twitter at PG Holyfield.
PG Holyfield. Yeah, I need to get a standard. Here's all these things.
Right.
This is where you find me.
Well, and we would lose our podcasting card if I didn't say it'll all be in the show notes.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks so much for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me. I love talking to you guys. I apparently butt dialed Chooch the other day.
That was interesting.
I looked down at my phone and it says, you know, Chooch, and I was like, oh cool, Chooch is calling me. And I get on there and he's like, you called me, and I'm like, what? No, I didn't call you.
Your butt missed him.
Yeah, I have a Bluetooth whatever headset, and I think it just hit talk and just dialed whoever was first on the list or something. I have no idea, but that
Bluetooth
was
Bluetooth boxer briefs.
Bluetooth boxer briefs, exactly.
Boxer briefs, yes. Thank you very much for inviting me, and we will have lots of fun in the next few weeks.
Yes, we will. Looking forward to it, and good luck with the launch, and good luck with the Amazon Rush and all of that. Can't wait to see you again.
Oh, yes, and I hope you have some time on the 15th to join me on Stick'Em, and we'll have some fun and be giving away some stuff. So.
Come on.
Wouldn't miss it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to Into the Blender.
You can find information, comment on episodes, and subscribe to the podcast at intotheblender.com.
You can send us email to intotheblender@gmail.com.
Or you can leave us a voicemail at 657-464-4820.
This podcast is released under a Creative Commons, non-commercial, no derivatives, 3.0 license.
You're free to make copies and share this podcast to your heart's content, just not modify or make money from it.
Theme music is provided by Sharif, found on podsafeaudio.com.
For more information about the artist, head to sharifmusic.com.
That's SHARIF music.com.